my name is Lois Erickson, and the title of this session is Writing to Inspire. I'll tell you just briefly about myself. I'm the author of two very small books. This one, Adventures in Solitude, and the other one is called Real People, A Real God. I wrote half of it. It's the Bible Studies for Lutheran Church Women for 1981-82. And my section was called Some Women of Israel. Besides that, I've written numerous articles and stories and have had about almost 70 of them published. That doesn't mean I had 70 separate ones. Some have been published more than once. So that's part of your marketing, is once you've sold first serial rights, then you can resell. And that's one important thing to know about marketing. Marketing is over half of freelance writing. Writing is fun, and the writing is part of it, but marketing is also fun, and especially if sometimes you sell something and then you see it in print. I do enjoy this, and I'm really happy to have an opportunity to share with you what I know. I'm quite new at this. I started writing in 1976, and after I retired from teaching, and this was my new career, and so I've had much to learn. Come in. No, it's not too late. We've just started.
Thank you.
I'm just about to tell what inspirational writing is, and I think it has three parts to it. If you read inspirational writing, it could help you to a deeper Christian faith. That's why we read a lot of little short articles or even books on inspiration, something inspirational to us. It also helps us to understand ourselves, and then eventually it helps us to reach out to other people. So come in, there's room here. I'd like to read just a couple very short selections that are inspirational, so you'll get an idea of what I'm talking about. This is from my little booklet, which came out in 1981.
Recording? Yeah.
Okay, good. Are you my recording?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Fine, I'm glad you're here. You can watch over it then. This first one is called King's X. King's X, the little girl shouted. The other children continued their game of tag, but they didn't bother the little girl, who had stopped to tie her shoe. She had shouted, King's X, and that meant time out. I'm no longer a little girl, but I still need to say, King's X. My shoelaces are flapping. I'm out of breath. Let the game of life go on without me. I need time out for just a while, and then I'll join the group again. Jesus, our servant king, took time out and even suggested that his followers do the same. Come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while. So please, let me have my King's X. I'll be back soon. And that, I was hoping when I wrote that people could, come in, that people could identify with the feeling that I had and learn something about themselves. The other one that I'm going to read to you is also very short, and I chose it because my husband wrote it, and it's in The Upper Room, the Methodist devotional book, which probably you're familiar with this one. This is for December 28, 1982. So it just came out. A close friend who attends our church was recently divorced. I asked how I could better understand her situation and be helpful to her. I was surprised by her response. She felt that separation by divorce is more traumatic than separation by death. Following the death of a loved one, the survivor tends to revive and relive the happy memories, she explained. Following a divorce, the persisting memories often are unhappy. In addition, I feel that some of my friends have become judgmental of me. That reinforces my feelings of failure and guilt. I began to wonder about my own reactions. How often do you and I, by judgmental attitudes, increase a sense of rejection at the exact moment when others desperately need our love and acceptance. And I thought that was very nicely written, so I wanted to read it to you. And that illustrates the point of reaching out to others in inspirational writing. So, I'm also going to tell you about techniques in writing, and then about marketing, and then some helps, some books that might be helpful to you, or writing conferences and such as that. Now, stop me anytime you have a question, because you might forget it if we don't take it right at the moment. If I'm going to answer it later on, I'll put you off. But feel free to stop me anytime and ask a question. First of all, I want to ask you, are any of you published writers?
I published one thing.
Oh, good for you.
But just through my university.
Oh,
I mean, okay. I was a like fellow in my senior year.
So oh, I count everything.
I tried to publish a paper in a medical journal, but so far no luck.
Uh-huh. Well, keep trying. Anyone else?
Only in the school thing. Only the school writing thing.
Oh, uh-huh. Oh, I count everything. I count we do an Advent booklet at our church, and they publish everything that anyone puts in. I count all of those. Yes, because that's part of writing. Yes.
I've done news reporting for my church magazines, but I have trouble getting inspired to do other kinds of things.
Oh, uh-huh.
Interesting. I've published poetry.
Oh, have you? Oh, and that's hard to get published.
In very small journals.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great. Very good. Well, I'm glad. And the others are aspiring. Well, good. That's what I like, someone who aspires. Now, not all of these are short, you know. Mary Schramm's new book is an inspirational book, and it's 100 and some pages long. So inspiration can cover a wide range of topics and lengths. Now, I want to talk a little bit about techniques of writing, because I've met a lot of editors at writers' conferences, and I have sent out hundreds of manuscripts. I try to keep 10 in the mail at all times. My goal is to have some published, but I also have the goal of several in the mail at all times, so that I can encourage myself. Hope springs eternal, you know. But now, if you think back to writing that you had in school, you know, an article or a book or a story, fiction, nonfiction, whatever, it has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So remember that at the beginning of your beginning, you must have what we call a hook. Now, here's the hook. This is my latest story that was published. It was summer 1982 in a magazine called New Expressions. I got paid for this 3 copies of the magazine. It's a new magazine, and they don't pay, but I was very favorably impressed by one of the editors that I met at a writer's conference, so I sent them my story called 4 Angels. I sold, no, I didn't sell. Well, yes, I sold it for 3 copies, but only first serial rights. Serial doesn't mean that it's a continued story. It means that it's in a magazine which comes out serial, like once a month or 4 times a year or something like that. That's what serial means in writing. And so then I can sell second serial rights, and I can sell on and on reprint rights forever as long as someone wants to buy it. You don't get paid as much usually the second time. I hope to get paid a little more on this one. Anyway. It's called 4 Angels, and it's fiction, but here's my hook. A cat screamed in the night. For one brief, wild moment, Holly considered getting out of bed to close the window. Instead, she pulled the blankets over her head. Now, does that hook you? She has a problem, doesn't she? But you don't know what it is yet. So then you have to tell your reader what the problem is. So you state your problem. Another scream, this time in Holly's mind. Cat. CAT scan, C-A-T brain scan. She couldn't remember what the initials stood for, but she knew that this was the morning. Holly pushed the blankets away from her eyes and looked at the luminous hands of the bedside clock. 13 minutes to 4. At 10:30, she would be in the deeper recesses of the outpatient clinic at City Hospital and in the clutches of the CAT scan machine. I've made it very dramatic along and at times a little humorous because it's so dramatic. But it, what I'm trying to point out is that she's frightened, and I hope that the reader gets that idea. Now, this is my hook and my beginning, and I have stated my problem, and then I go into the middle part, and she has all these reasons for about two columns why she shouldn't have this scan this day. She thinks of all the reasons why she shouldn't, and now, I believe that every story and every article, no matter what the subject, it should have either some dialogue or at least a dialogue or a quote in it to make it interesting. You see, it's more interesting if you look at the page and you see some dialogue in there. If it's just big, long paragraphs, people may not want to read it. And it's all right to be published, but it's nice to be read also. So, so here's my dialogue. Well, first a little paragraph that leads up to the dialogue. It had been helpful to talk to Mom and Dad on the phone last night. She told them about the scan, and they said they wished they lived closer so they could go with her. It's really nothing much, she bravely reassured them. Dr. Kingsley says it's just a simple test. She talked with Grandma, too. Grandma had lived with them as long as Holly could remember. Dear Grandma, with her many sayings, and so here's a quote, look before you leap, a stitch in time saves nine. And the nursery rhyme that Grandma said each night when Holly was a child, four corners to my bed, four angels round my head, one to watch, two to pray, one to keep all fears away. Then I was going to read just a little more. I need an angel right now, thought Holly. I'm afraid that I might have a brain tumor, and I'm even more afraid to know if I have one. And right now, I'm afraid of the CAT scan machine. What if it falls on my head? And then the story goes on with using this poem, Four Corners to My Bed, interspersed with all of Holly's fears. First, she's afraid that she's had too much radiation in her life. So she calls up Dr. Kingsley and says, maybe I shouldn't have this CAT scan machine, and he reassures her again. And then she goes to the hospital and she has forgotten her checkbook. And so she thinks, oh, maybe they won't have it today because I can't pay for it ahead of time, but they don't pay attention to that. And all the time she's saying, four corners to my bed, four angels around my head. Then she's allergic to shrimp, and the solution in the vein is iodine based, and so she says, oh, she gets very, very sick, but he plunges the needle into her arm, and they take her off to have put the machine on. And then just as she finally accepts that she's going to have the test, she says, one to watch, two to pray, one to keep all fears away. And then that's the middle part of the story. Then, so hopefully I've kept the interest of the reader all the way through, because it's one problem after another. And you think you just have something solved, and you do this in fiction or nonfiction. You think you have something solved, and then something else worse happens. And then you think you have that solved, depending on how long your article is. And then something else happens. So, and finally, you, of course, come to an upbeat ending. The Christian market likes upbeat endings. Not necessarily happy endings, but hopeful at least, or so on. So then we come to the end of this story. Before noon, Holly was back in her apartment. On the ledge outside the window, the neighbor's cat was lazily washing its face. This is called full circle. We've had the cat at the beginning, screamed in the night, and it reminded her of the CAT scan machine. And now we've come full circle and we're back to the cat image. She opened the window and picked up the cat. Now she's no longer afraid, you see. She's finished, she didn't get hurt. The attendant said the test looked good. So her fears are gone, so she picks up the neighbor's cat, and this is symbolic of her fears have gone away. As she stroked its fur, she said, "I guess I have angels watching over me." And then we have another little surprise, just a little extra thing to, otherwise it'd be a little bit of a dull ending, but we have a little extra thing here. So she says, "And I remember something else that Grandma told me. She said, I'm an old woman now and have worried about many things, most of which have never happened. From now on, I hope I can be more trustful like Grandma, no matter what problems I have." And then to tie the whole thing to the very end, the cat purred and Holly let it rub its head against her hand. So it has come full circle. And so that gives you some idea of techniques of writing. Any questions about about that?
Did you base that on a story of somebody you knew, or did you?
Yeah, I had one myself, and I went through all those fears. Would the machine fall on my head and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you know, you don't know ahead.
That's a scary test.
And then you look, you can't even see the thing. It moans and groans. Have you had one?
No.
No.
I didn't know that it ever. It did really fall on your head?
No, I was afraid it would.
Oh,
no, it didn't. No, it didn't fall on my head. But that was my fear ahead of time. Huge. I envisioned a huge X-ray machine, you know, right over me. Well, I couldn't even see the thing. It moaned and groaned, but I couldn't even see it. I mean, I was very comfortable lying there with a blanket over me, as comfortable as could be. Didn't hurt a bit.
Just shoved in.
Uh-huh. But you do go, when you don't know, you just go through all those things. And so I thought, as I was having this and before I went to have it, I thought, well, if I'm going to go through all this, I'm going to really observe everything and write something about it. Might as well make some use of it. Same with this. I was sick with my bad leg, and I thought, well, I might as well make some use of this. So I wrote a book, and I have another book I have written. I haven't found a publisher yet. It's called Consider the Herbs, and I was having some headaches, and I learned about herbs and decided to drink herb tea for my headaches, and it's helped. So I wrote this book about herbs. And I think, well, and I keep telling my doctor, I gave him a copy of this, and I told him, well, if I have these things, I might as well make some use of them. And he just laughs and encourages me, so if I ever get it, the herb book published, I'll give him a copy. Your own experiences, that's what you write about. You have to write about something you know, unless you want to do lots and lots of research, which... You can do that too. Any other questions about your techniques? I wrote a little story about, it starts out, shadows lay across the trail as I was hiking in the Cascade Mountains of Washington, and I based it on walking up to Donkey Lake, and then I get off the trail and I fall into the brambles and all this, and I don't know where the trail is, and finally I see my husband's footprints again. It's called Footprints on the Trail. Did I say that already? No, anyway, it is. It's called Footprints on the Trail. And I send it off to an editor at Faith and Inspiration, and he sent it back and said, well, make it more dramatic, and when you get to the lake, don't find your husband right away. Have another bit of trauma there. So I just had it in my mind. I just in the story, I had it so that I was worried, you see, Well, I had forgotten to ask him which way around the lake he was going to go. He went on ahead to fish, and he does that frequently. So he'd gone on ahead to fish, and so then the next bit of conflict in my mind was, how will I know which way he went? But when I got to the fork in the trail, he had made a mark with the toe of his hiking boot, pointing me in the right direction. And then, of course, you can see how I built in my moral of my story that you follow footprints, and also you make footprints to follow. And then the last sentence is, I have footprints to follow, and I don't remember exactly, but other people are following. I make footprints that other people will follow. My daily prayer is that all of the footprints go in the right direction. And so they bought it, and they paid me $90. It was a very short piece. I've sold it twice since. I sold Lutheran Women. They paid me $25, and Second Rites, you see. And then I sold it to Purpose, which is the Mennonite adult magazine. And last summer, I took a black and white photo while I was up here at Holden. It was happened to be on the way to Holden Lake. But I took it especially to illustrate it before I sent it to Purpose, because the editor there, David Hostetler, likes black and white photos with his stories. So I took a nice black and white photo of shadows across the trail, and he published it, and he paid me $37.50. So I made over $100. It was about 350 words long. So that adds up quite nicely. And you don't make a lot of money freelancing unless you have written Roots or... But you do have an opportunity to share your ideas, which is one of the big things. So now, is there any more questions on that? We'll go on to marketing. The first thing an editor, when you meet an editor, what they ask is, who, and they don't always say it in the nicest tone of voice, because they want to shake you up, and they say, who would want to read it? Mm-hmm. And that is what you should always think before you write something. Who would want to read it? What market would you send this to? Now, you don't always have to have a specific magazine in mind. Sometimes I write something specifically for Purpose because I know what the editor likes. Or I'll write something specifically for Lutheran Women, and oftentimes they will buy it. Not always, but oftentimes. Then again, I'll have an idea and I want to write it, so I write it all down, and then I look for a market. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Really, the best way is to think, who would want to read it first, so that you'll know what type of magazine or what type of publishing company, if you're writing a book, would want to have what you're writing. Now, this is invaluable. It's called Writer's Market. This is a 1978 edition, but I buy a new one every year. I left this one here at Holden in about 1979 or 1980 because I didn't need it anymore. I had a new one from each year. They cost, I don't know if they're $16, $17 now, but it's invaluable if you're going to go into this and really want to do something about it, because this lists thousands and thousands of markets. And it has a section on religious publications. It tells, for example, Scope. Yeah, are you familiar with Scope, mm-hmm. most of you?
Yeah.
It's a women's magazine for ALC. This is what they say about Scope. So you look in here and you look and you see the editor, the name of the editor, so you know who you're going to write to. And it says they buy 200 to 300 manuscripts a year. Ooh, great. Some only buy like a dozen, but Scope buys that many. And so you have an opportunity. Their circulation is 325,000, which is really great. And then, let's see, and then you, what do you want? They want to submit seasonal material 4 to 5 months in advance. That's good to know. Some want it a year in advance, so that's good to know. And then it contains articles for inspiration and growth, as well as information about the mission and concerns of the church, and material that is geared to seasonal emphasis. It also wants any subject that touches the home. So, and then they say the length, 700 to 1,000 words. So if yours is 300 words, you better not send it to Scope. Or if it's 2,000, no point in sending it to Scope, because they want 700 to 1,000 words. Their articles are quite short. And then they tell how much they pay. They pay $10 to $50. You can use black and white photos and how much they pay for them. They use very little poetry. And then how to break in. Examine a copy of Scope and submit a well-written manuscript that fits the obvious slant and audience. I sent them a story about my foster son, Jim. They sent it back and suggested that I rewrite it, which I did. And then all the time sending it to Jim to get his approval each time. And then and they published that. So, and then I've only had two in Scope. Another one was called I'm Glad I Listened. It's about a strange phone call I had. They printed that just exactly the way I wrote it. So,
on the first one, did they make constructive suggestions on what to pay attention to and rewriting it?
Yes, they told me how they wanted it changed. My foster son was black, and there was some wording that they felt wasn't just the way that would fit into their magazine. Jim had approved of it, but they felt that it wasn't quite for their magazine. So it didn't hurt the story at all. I just rewrote that section and sent it to Jim and said, "What do you think now?" And he said he thought it was great. Anything I wanted to write, he said, was fine. And then they published it. And it was kind of a nice article.
Who's your publisher on the Writer's Market?
Writer's Digest Books, Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
Does that cover publishing houses as well?
Pardon?
Does that cover publishing houses as well?
Yes, uh-huh. The whole first section are book publishers. And then all types of retirement magazines, sports and outdoor publications, teen and young adults, women's publications, all of these, picture sources, writers' clubs, literary, hobby, health, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So it's a good book. Now, the other one I was going to tell you about was I got all these magazines over here in the reading room. The other one was The Other Side, and I lost my place now, but I'll find it again. The Other Side. Here it is. It's a magazine, it comes out of Philadelphia. It doesn't say who publishes it. A magazine of Christian discipleship, radical in tone and outlook, with a definite point of view. They want, and their circulation, incidentally, is 4,700. So that's a little different from Scope, which is 325,000. So they may not get as many manuscripts. So you might have a better chance of getting published in The Other Side because people look through here and they say, well, I'll send it to Scope first, because they're 325,000 and you're reaching more people and it's more prestigious and so on. But I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that, because if I have something that's going to fit The Other Side, well, then I've sent it there. I've sent things to them. They haven't accepted any yet. But articles are not encouraged unless they are highly creative descriptions of personal experiences relative to Christian discipleship amidst current issues of society, or interviews or profiles which don't just grind the axe but communicate personality. So they want something very special. And they want fiction on hard social issues. And so there are possibilities there for this type of writing, which I enjoy doing once in a while. They want length 250 to 1,750 words. One of theirs here is called How to Avoid Hungry People. Of course, you know, that's there. Close your eyes, close your ears, and look the other way. Well, they're saying not to do that, of course.
Does it have a lead-in?
Okay.
Okay. The other, another one is there's called Meet the Nelsons, introducing a Seattle area family that is obedient to Christ, strives hard to serve and to be there, and it shows a picture of an interracial family. So that's the type of things that they write, that they publish. Scope has one, To Fear and Love, which is looks like a nice inspirational article. They also do social issues. And this one in the back says, Tying Shoelaces, and it's just a very, very short little one like that. It's nice to have some of these little ones out in the mail, hoping someone will buy them, because they don't take a lot of typing or a lot of postage. You have to send self-addressed stamped envelopes for all of these, so your postage is very high. And I send everything first class, even book manuscripts, because it just shows your editor that you like your own work. Some people, well, of course, if I wrote a book that was 1,000 pages long, I might send a fourth class manuscript, but mine are quite short, so I send them all first class. And some of them cost, you know, cost like $5 for going and coming back. Book manuscripts, of course, I send query letters to ask if they're interested in seeing the manuscript before I send the entire manuscript, because it saves a lot of postage and time. There's another good book, and it's called The Christian Writer's Marketplace. And I don't have a copy with me, but it's you probably can get it in some Christian bookstores. The author is William Gentz, G-E-N-T-Z. And there's another author, too. I'm not sure how to spell her last name, Elaine Colvin. I believe that's correct. It's put out by Running Press, and it's also an excellent book. It's been out about 2 years, so maybe some of the editors that it lists may have changed by now, but it has not only a whole lot of markets for both books and magazines, but it has an excellent index in the back, so that you can look up and see if you want to write for the Methodists, why it lists all the Methodist publications. If you want to write for Lutherans, it lists all those. Then it also lists by subject matter and has some other indexes. I can't recall what they are now, but it really, I do recommend that book too. The other book that I recommend, which I don't have a copy with, is called Writing to Inspire. And that's why I named this session Writing to Inspire, because I'm one of the authors of this book. William Gentz is, maybe that's not enough. William Gentz is also the editor of this book. Before he went into publishing, he was an ALC Lutheran pastor. So and he's very knowledgeable. He lives in New York. He's also one of the editors at Faith and Inspiration. That's how I became acquainted with him. And this book just came out in 1982 now. And the articles are really excellent, I think, for inspirational writing. It covers novels, short stories, articles, inspirational articles. That's by Donna Donahue of Guidepost Magazine. Lee Roddy, who writes a lot of fiction, does the fiction part. Bill Gentz has a chapter in there on who are you writing for, and that's the editors say, who's gonna want to read this, and he explains how to think that through before you start writing. There's a chapter on poetry. Connie Soth, whose name is here on the flyer, writes about library, writing for library publications. My section is, I have just part of a chapter. Mine is Writing for Women, and it's in the same chapter with Writing for Men. And I explain how to write for women, which could go for any type of writing also, really, because I talk about the appealing to the five senses. What do you see? What do you hear? What do you smell? What do you touch? And what do you taste? And you want to bring these things out in your writing so that people can experience your experience with you. So what do you taste? I have hot, crusty rolls in one of my stories. I recommend this book too, and that's a Writer's Digest book, which is the same company that puts out this Writer's Market, and their address is Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, any questions on that so far? Yes.
This is digressing, probably back to the first on technique. You were mentioning titles. How do you title a book?
Oh, yes, titles. Probably. I didn't have it in my notes because it's one of my problems. I tend to forget about titles until I am ready to type my manuscript and think, what in the world am I going to use for a title? And my husband's just the opposite. He thinks of a title, excellent title, before he has written it. And then he writes, a title is very important. It's the first thing that is going to grab your editor or your reader, is your title. And if your title doesn't grab you, you may not even want to read the thing at all. So you just really do have to work on your titles. A rule of thumb is that a title should not be more than 7 words. Short titles are oftentimes better. Then sometimes you'll see these huge long titles that are about 15 words long, but they're catchy in some way or other. So, but for, I'd say for writers like us, I try to keep at least under 7 words. Then you spend all this effort thinking up a title and asking your friends and working on this title, and you finally decide on a title and you send off your manuscript. They print it word for word, except they change the title. I had one called Prayer on the Freeway, and Purpose published it, and they named it Before I Knew I Had a Problem, which was really better. I liked his title better than mine.
Do they try to get your permission to change it?
No, they just change them. You don't know until you get a copy of the magazine. This was my title for Adventures in Solitude. I liked that title, and they liked it also.
No, so they're really recognized. Yeah,
sure. But oftentimes they change the title. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All through the time that I was in high school, my mother wanted me to enter the Guidepost Young Adults Reading or Writing Contest. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do it when I was a freshman, sophomore, junior, because I never had an inspirational experience right about it. Anyway, it got to be really towards the deadline. It was like the end of November, I think, was the deadline. And they had this inspirational experience. Some mother thought it was from the Lord, so she wrote a note. So I skipped school one day and I wrote it all. And an hour before it had to be in the mail, we were still typing it up, but we had no title. Anyway, my English teacher was also my Sunday school teacher, and so we were throwing all these titles out, and it was about loneliness and reconciliation and everything. Anyway, the title we came up with, I'm embarrassed, but I've got to tell you because it's just hilarious, it was The Agony and Ecstasy of Loneliness. Isn't that just awful? Well, the article was rejected because we had one typographical error.
Oh.
So it didn't even get past the, you know, the typographical editing. Oh. But I think it would have been canceled for the title.
Oh, well, titles are difficult for me, but I have friends who help me. And sometimes when you can talk it over with someone else, then you can come up with a title yourself too. But yes, that's funny. Thanks for sharing that. Which brings up the point of writing for guideposts and Reader's Digest. I think the beginning writer, and myself included, although I didn't send to Reader's Digest, but I have tried Guidepost numerous times. That's the first one you think of is, oh, Guidepost. My experience is just right for Guideposts, or my experience is just right for Reader's Digest. Well, they get thousands and thousands of manuscripts. So I've never made it into Guideposts, and I haven't even tried Reader's Digest, because I know that if they get several hundred manuscripts in a day, they're going to have a hard time getting around to reading mine. Whereas I can send an article off to Lutheran Women, and Peter will write to me usually in a couple weeks and either send it back or say, we like it. So I don't know how many manuscripts Lutheran Women gets or how many manuscripts Scope gets, but I know that I have a better chance there. And the editor at Purpose is, he has a form rejection, which is just about a little card about this big, but he'll always write something on there, like when he rejects, he'll nice experience, or sorry, or something. And then you get about four or five of those, and you look at them and you think, he's taken time to write that on there, so I'll send him another one. And if they take time to write just sorry on your rejection letter, your rejection slip, then you know that they like your writing. This doesn't fit their purpose. They've just maybe published something on the same subject, or they don't publish just exactly that, but they like your writing, and so try them again. And they say paper your wall with your rejection slips. Well, I don't keep them all. I keep some. I keep all the ones that have sorry on them, or nice experience, or something. And then every once in a while, I look through them and look them over. This William Gentz also puts out something called Christian Writers Newsletter, which gives little, very short articles on suggestions on writing and markets and so on. And I'm sorry, I didn't know I was going to do this session, so I don't have his address with me, unless I could remember it. It's 300 East 34th Street, New York, New York, something, something. You'd have to look up the zip code. But I think it's 300 East 34th Street, Apartment 9C. And if you're interested in writing and asking about his newsletter.
What was his name again?
William Gentz. He's the first one on here. Or if you wrote in care of this Writer's Digest books, they would forward it to him.
That's a newsletter on how to write.
Yes, it's a little mimeographed sheet. I think you pay about, I don't remember how much we pay, $9 a year or something, which seems like a lot for a mimeographed sheet of about three or four pages, but it's very good, and he's one of the most knowledgeable men in the United States, I think, in publishing. A lot of writers, well-known writers, write for his little mimeographed sheets. I mean, they subscribe to it as well as write little articles for it. So,
when you send stuff in, like, do you just type it on regular typing paper?
No, I use bond paper. I use 20-weight bond. And typing paper is too thin and doesn't look nice. And you need something that's nicer looking than that.
And do you put a cover letter or something with it too?
I send a cover letter sometimes, not always. If it's just some short article that speaks for itself, there's no reason to put a cover letter. if it's an editor that I know, I usually write something. But there's no need to write a cover letter that just says, here is my 800-word article on on such and such. And because they know that when they look at the manuscript, and they're very busy. So you really don't need a cover letter sometimes. Now, if you can't find a freelance writing class at your local community college or adult education or whatever, then I recommend going to the library, the public library, and check out books on how to write. When I started, I was not only taking a class at the community college, but I also went to the library every 2 weeks and checked out 3 or 4 books on how to write. Read them very carefully, and they will tell you how to type your manuscript. Your name, your address, your social security number, here it is over here, if you're facing me, in your left-hand corner, name, address, social security number. Over in this right-hand corner, your word count. I count every word in my manuscript. 1,050, rounded off to 50s. 1,050 words, first serial rights, or whatever rights I'm planning to sell. And if I'm selling reprint rights, then I put in parentheses where it was published before. You don't have to put, if it's been published, say, twice or 3 times before, you don't have to put down every place it's published, either the last one or the most prestigious one. You put down and when it was, so it would like scope April 1982 in parentheses under your reprint rights or second serial rights or whatever. Then you start your manuscript. That's see, your name and social security number and all are up here. Your word count is here. At least halfway down the page you put your title, and then you skip 4 spaces. I put my typewriter at 25 and 85, so I have 60 characters to a line. Double space, black type, heavy black type. Editor's eyes get very tired. Leave about this much space at the bottom.
No,
2 inches.
2 inches, maybe. Each page?
Inch and a half to 2 inches at the bottom. Then on page 2, you have your name. Am I going too fast? You have your name and your title again. If it's a really long one, just part of it, just so they'll know. Up here you put just put number 2. Then you skip from your number 2, you skip down about 6 spaces, not from your name. It's from you at the top part. I do this, and then I go over here to 2, then I skip 6 spaces, then I start typing double space again, and 25 lines to your page, and that's all, no more, no less, on each page, except your last page, of course.
Is pica or elite?
Pardon?
Pica or elite?
Pica is the largest one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, use pica, don't use elite.
Mm-hmm.
And change your typewriter ribbon often. Clean your type. I clean my type every time before I type a manuscript, even if it doesn't look like it needs it. And then on your last page, your last line has come, and skip down 4 spaces. Well, no, 2 spaces. Just 2 spaces. That's just double space again. And write the end. If you're a newspaper person, you want to write 30. Well, don't write 30. That's for newspaper people. Write the end. And that's just very briefly how to do a manuscript.
Why do you say FICA instead of elite?
Well, editors don't like to read elite. Because it's harder to read. So,
I always thought it was corny to put the end. Is that?
I know. I feel corny every time I write it, but that's what they want. So that's what you do. The way you learn some of this is going to writers' conferences. And there's a really fine writers' conference every year in Portland, Oregon. And there are many others throughout the United States, fine writers' conferences. And Bill Gentz, in his newsletter, lists them every year. In Portland, in March, at Werner Pacific College, there's a writers' conference that lasts from Sunday afternoon till Wednesday. It's usually about the middle of March. Do you remember the dates for this year?
About the 20th, yeah.
Yeah, about the 20th. Last year it was around the 14th and 15th, but I think this next year it might be around the 20th, unless I have that backwards. The important thing of going to a writer's conference is that you not only get the lectures and the discussions, but you get to meet the editors, and they come from all over the United States, New York and all over. People come to this conference from Alaska and as far away as Florida. Most of them, of course, are from Oregon and Washington. But you can sign up to talk to editors. You get 10 minutes. Occasionally you get 15 with an editor. You bring along a manuscript to show them and bounce an idea off the editor, and they'll very frankly tell you what they think. And I've met some really, what I want to say was that if this has been the most helpful thing to me is to meet the editors in person. Roland Seabold of Augsburg and Jerry Vida of Concordia, just meeting them and being able to talk to them, you get some really fine ideas. And they come from Revell and Zondervan and a lot of the large religious publishing houses. Most people, well, the first time they go to a writer's conference, are hesitant to sign up to talk to an editor, but please don't hesitate, because it's just a very valuable experience, and you can make some really fine friends with the editors that way. So then, when you're ready to send off a manuscript, you can say, I met you at the writer's conference, and this holds some weight. They read your manuscript a little more thoroughly after they've met you. And I found that I was selling more manuscripts after I went to my first writer's conference than I did before. And this coming year, I'm going to be one of the faculty at the Werner Pacific. I've gone for 5 years, and now they've invited me to help teach, and I'm going to teach a class just like this on inspirational writing. So, thank you so much. I think our time is up.